Brokering success demands a battle-ready strategy. TIE TMS equips brokers with the ultimate battle station for conquering a tough market. With TIE, brokers gain access to a comprehensive platform where rate intelligence and quote history coverage on a single screen. Revolutionize the way your brokers perform by giving them a competitive advantage with TIE TMS. For more info, visit tiesoftware.com/battlestation.
Welcome back to another edition of Chat Call. Today, we're covering all things warehousing and fulfillment and everything in between. Don't forget to subscribe to Chat Call, the newsletter on freightwaves.com if you haven't already. Today, we are welcoming Ryan Martin, the president and of distribution and fulfillment at ITS Logistics. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Mary. Looking forward to it.
I'm pretty excited about today because we've kind of danced all around some of these topics of, you know, warehousing, fulfillment, e-commerce. But today we're blending it all into one and getting into the nitty gritty of it. Before we get too far into that, though, let's get some background on you and kind of how you got started at ITS.
Overall is a full service logistics provider. I've been in this industry for 25 years, which is why I have ample amounts of gray hair. I did not think that I would start off in supply chain and logistics, but I changed my major in school because it was the highest paying major coming out of the University of Nevada, Reno. And unfortunately, when I graduated, it was the dot-com crash, so it wasn't the best time to graduate anytime. But just started, you know, working my way up the ladder. I actually worked 11 years for JCPenney. I always tell people I was like Mikey from Life. I was like, I'll do it. Like, Mikey likes it, I'll go anywhere, do anything. So moved about seven times in about 10 years to do just about any role you could imagine. And over time have worked for shippers, 3PLs throughout the nation. And when this opportunity came up at ITS Logistics, I've always coveted it because, you know, I'm not from Nevada, but I kind of am now because I've lived here about half my life. And it's a great brand. It's well known in the area. And we're really good to our people and our communities outside of just being, you know, a logistics provider because of the space that we're shipping brown boxes. There's nothing really sexy about warehousing and distribution and transportation. It's really what you do outside of work and everything else. And I knew the founders and about 7 years ago, I came on board and I've loved every minute since.
I'm glad that just like almost everyone I've met in transportation and supply chain, you did not set out to be in this industry. You kind of fell into it like all.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, my father was a farmer, so I would say the ultimate type of supply chain is getting produce to a store. It's by far and the hardest and most difficult, most stressful type of supply chain. I said I would never be a farmer. I'd never do this type of work, but I guess it just called me, and I love solutioning, which is the best part about what we do, is taking a problem and finding a solution for it. And that's the exciting part.
Yeah. And also supply chain and agriculture is not for the faint of heart either. That is something that I've done in a past life. It's always a fun time when you're like, are we planting today? Or are we harvesting today? Or are we sitting there cursing Mother Nature because it's too wet this morning? I never cared more about the weather than I did when that was my life.
Or the market too, right? There was times when the market was bad and it didn't make sense to actually pick the produce, and you actually, you know, ruined it and basically dissed it back into the ground. So it's a very hard life. And I'm thankful that I didn't get into that life. So
yes, love the people that had that. It's cut out for them, but it's not cut out for me. But what is cut out for us is this distribution and fulfillment life. So I'm going to call you an expert. You're an expert in distribution and fulfillment. But there has been, specifically in kind of the warehousing space, there's been a significant drop in this new space construction. I mean, during COVID, it seemed like everyone and their brother was trying to pop up a warehouse, and warehousing rental rates were through the roof. So we've seen that kind of drop off. So what are some of those main factors that you think is contributing to kind of the decline of that desperate need for new warehouse space and then also existing warehouse space?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. It's demand, right? So it's the bullwhip effect of COVID finally coming, you know, coming back. And in the end, I would say by 2022, there was no space, right? So every major developer was building, and there was, you know, in almost every market. And there was this euphoria about building more and more DCs. And now you're starting to see vacancy rates trickle up. And it's mostly just based off demand. So, you know, developers are smart and landlords are smart. They're not going to continue to develop when there's not the demand there, and they're going to have to sit on empty warehousing. So they're in control of the amount of capacity that's out there. So they're not going to continue on and build for empty space just because the demand's not there. And I'm not saying that demand has slowed in terms of activity of people purchasing, because if you look at trend lines, e-com is still growing. There's still demand there. It's just there was just so much, I would say, need for space, because everyone was so there was a point where no one could get product. And then for about a year, there was just way too much product. And you know, there's been so many studies on it. I'm not going to go through that whole piece. But now it's getting to where everyone's kind of right-sizing their inventories. And there's not as much need for the overall warehousing within the United States, unless you're in certain industries, maybe solar, automotive, those types of things. But for your general commodities, there's just not as much of a need anymore, or at least a need to what there was. So I'm just expecting that this is kind of a 1 to 2 year kind of, you know, lip or stopgap, and then developers will start building again until they, you know, they want to make sure that vacancy rate's pretty low, because then they could command a much higher rate when they go through and actually, you know, have folks sign a lease. So they're in control. So I would do the same thing if I were in their shoes. So.
I mean, it makes sense, because just like after any explosion, there's like the big boom and everybody's scrambling to pick up the pieces. And then as things kind of level out, you're left kind of going, okay, well, what's realistic for me moving forward? Like, yes, e-commerce is on the rise, but as e-commerce is rising, are all of my other retail stores, are all of these other customers that I have, are they looking to have all this excess inventory as well? And I think as we've seen a lot of, you know, those big retailers like your Targets, your Walmarts and everything kind of consolidate down their inventory and not necessarily carry as much, move back to kind of how things were before. I think we've seen that natural settling that happens of, you know, the demand is there, but it's not as desperate as it was before. It's more of like a, we still have some space, but we're not going to charge you an obscene amount of money for it. We're just going to charge you like half of an arm instead of an arm and a leg.
And the thing is, the cost structure is really high, so they can't offer insane discounts, right? So they can't do that because they won't make money, and this is a long-term play. And just to give you some context of how bad it was in 2022, 2021, when we were looking for additional capacity in Indianapolis or Texas or what have you, there were times landlords even show up to show us their properties, right? They're just like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to get 7 bids on this. It doesn't matter, you know, and I'm just going to take the tenant that's, you know, has the best credit, is going to pay me the most and what have you. And it was more of just a transaction. There's no partnership. There was no nothing. It's turned around now, right? Now I have a lot of solicitations. People ask me, hey, would you like to come see my buildings? And, you know, are you interested in opening up a building in, you know, North Dakota? No, I'm not really interested in opening a building in North Dakota. So it's really interesting how the market has changed. But I have a feeling that over the next year or two, that'll start to subside and it'll get back to normalcy. And I think we're all kind of looking forward to that in all areas of the supply chain, right? So from a 3PL perspective, you kind of thrive on the disruption, because disruption creates a lot of opportunity for you. And when there's a lot of stability, it's more of this kind of normalized growth.
Yeah, I think that's something that I had strongly shouted. I can't even say I've quietly gone about it, but even during like the high times, I was like, well, you need to remember that when this flips, like people are going to remember how, you know, how you try to take advantage of them, or how, you know, all of these situations played out. So it's definitely something that is always should be on the top of mind is, you know, don't just take advantage of people because you can. Yes, making money is great, but also you have to deal with these partnerships well into the future. And so I can't say I'm exactly sad that some of the warehouse developers are having to deal with some of the consequence.
Yeah, it's we're definitely in the driver's seat. If you're looking for a warehouse, you are specifically in certain markets like DFW, Indianapolis, the Southeast now, which, you know, just blew up. And it's always the bullwhip effect. And I always say this too, because my long time at JCPenney, I got to see the pendulum swing multiple times, you know, where everyone goes away from the West Coast. They're like, we can't have the West Coast, Port of Oakland, Long Beach, Los Angeles. They're terrible. We can't do it. We're going to the East Coast. Well, where does everything come from? Well, it comes from Asia. Well, where's the fastest path? It's the West Coast. So we built out, you know, the Southeast, like there's no tomorrow. There's no people. There's no warehousing. And now they're sitting on a bunch of capacity because everyone's gone back to the West Coast because you get, you know, from Asia to Long Beach, you get a container for $1,000. Well, why not do it? You know, there's issues with Panama Canal. There's all these different things and challenges to getting to the East Coast if you're still sourcing from Asia. So you're starting to see California heat up again, right? So it's the normal pendulum. It's going to continue to swing. And if you've been in this industry long enough, you just kind of wait it out and just have a good strategic plan for it. So
yeah, that the cyclical nature of transportation will never change.
No, let's face it, transportation is somewhat of a commodity, right? There is definitely a market for it, and it goes up and down, and you can look at every freight cycle, you know, on a map and you could definitely see it. So, and we're kind of in a down cycle and we all know that. So
one of the challenges that kind of comes with these downs, well, not necessarily just a down cycle, but any cycle really, is kind of that specifically from that distribution and fulfillment side is, you know, those labor shortages, that staffing. Why is it always so much of a challenge to keep and maintain labor in a warehouse? Because you would think, you know, at some point in time you would nail it down and you have the perfect answer, but it still seems like everywhere you go, you could just walk into a warehouse job and as long as you have a pulse, they're like,
it's very true. You know, I've been in warehousing for some part of at least 20 years in warehouses as well. And it's not a sexy job. Let's just face it. You're unloading a trailer, you're doing, you know, redundant tasks over and over and over again all day long, you're punching a time clock. It's not great. I would say at ITS, we have actually really good turnover rates. And one thing that we focus on, it's really hard for most large organizations, right? You're a number. When you're in a warehouse, large organization, you're a number. You're on a spread, your name's on a spreadsheet. That's about it. No matter what they say, that's realistically what it is. And you have productivity initiatives and you're basically tasked with these productivity calls on a day-to-day basis. Like you only hit 120 today, you're supposed to do 150, right? You take the human being and the human being nature out of the work. And I think at ITS, what we have said, we will never do that. We're going to treat you like an adult. We're going to hold you accountable, but we understand life happens, right? So, we're going to try to work around whatever we can, and we're going to create pay structures that don't incentivize you to just work harder, actually incentivize you to learn, right? And continue to grow within the organization, because people naturally, especially with younger generations, they want to be challenged, right? And if you look at in the last 25 years that I've been in this industry, 2021 was by far the worst year I've ever experienced for labor. It was horrendous. Now, a lot of that was because of the incentives the government was laying out, but I have never seen such a terrible workforce population in my life, right? People didn't want to come work. If they did, they were leaving whenever they wanted. And you got into a state where it's like, well, if I terminate Johnny, there's no Johnny for tomorrow. And I don't know, even if Johnny shows up for 4 hours, 4 hours is better than nothing. And it was really challenging. Now, the tide has changed a little bit. We're starting to see a lot better activity. And you know, in certain markets, you know, being in a warehouse job is a livable, you know, profession. You know, certain markets, it's still not. You can't, you know, be a picker in a warehouse and own a home, right? You know, in Reno, Nevada, if you're a picker in the warehouse making $20 an hour, it's still hard to have an apartment. So because of inflation in certain areas, it's really challenging from a warehouse perspective. And you typically have to have multiple jobs. And so if you tie all that in together, it's really challenging. And a lot of times, if you're a warehouse employee, you have opportunities within other, I would say, professions, right? So when the economy is booming, what else is also booming? Construction. Well, I could go get a construction job, right? Working outside, maybe it's a little bit harder, but it might be, you know, a $30 an hour job. My scenery changes from time to time. So I'm not going to the same place and, you know, in a warehouse that's lit all day long. It's a different atmosphere. And I think those are some of the struggles that will always continue to plague a warehouse. And I don't care how much automation we put into it, right? You're always going to need people at some function within a warehouse. And it's going to be a challenge that we will always have and will continue to have. And it's just never going to go away. And you just have to kind of roll with the punches and do your best to retain the team that you have, right?
Yeah, I feel like that's because it's like you said, when a lot of times in warehouses, you know, a human being gets reduced down to a number and it's just a productivity situation. And I mean, obviously, yes, you want to keep your warehouse busy. You have goals to meet. You have like service level agreements that you have to honor. But at the same time, like you have a person. And if someone's having a bad day, it's definitely going to affect their thing. That's not necessarily to excuse them and say, oh, well, you know, you're having a bad day. It's okay. It's kind of one of those where like, eh, it happens. We're going to move on. Have you guys found, you mentioned something that like, you know, in other careers or other paths, there's development or, you know, other ways to be challenged. Have you guys found any like really cool things that have really taken off that some of your warehouse staff has enjoyed, whether it's, you know, maybe making a game out of it or, you know, having a healthy competition between locations? Have you guys found anything that really kind of helps, you know, solidify that the whole there is a development here? You're not just a number putting things in a box.
Yeah, I would say honestly, this is the one thing where it's a little bit easier for a 3PL than it is a 1PL, right? Because 1PLs, I've worked both, and if you're managing your own product, there's a lot of simplicity to it. It's very simple, right? That's where it's really hard to maintain labor because you're going to be doing, if you're receiving, you're receiving it the same way every day, 365 days a year, and you're doing the same damn job 365 days a year, right? And a 3PL, especially in a multi-tenant operation, you could learn different customers, different applications, different technologies. And so what we have done is we incentivize you to learn. So because I would rather have a multi-purpose tool of a worker than one trick pony, right? I always tell my team that, like, I don't want someone that can only do X all day long. I want them to be able to do everything. And by mentally challenging people, a lot of the time it makes them more engaged in what they do. So it also keeps them around a lot longer. And so that is something that we have focused on. Do we have healthy competition? Absolutely. Especially during peak times. You know, we have productivity boards that, you know, shows who's picked the most and all those types of things. But that kind of only goes so far, right? Giveaways and everything else. I truly believe that it's human nature to want to be challenged mentally. And if we could continue to do that, continue to evolve, we're going to be in a good spot. Not just us, but the industry in general.
I think that is something that is incredibly important. And that's something that we've brought up, you know, on different aspects of whether it's back office training or, you know, even your operations support, is having that cross training for any employee that, you know, if for some reason John has to leave tomorrow or John turns in his notice, you don't want all of that institutional information to leave with John. You want to make sure that, okay, well, if John is sick or out for a week, we have someone else that can immediately slide right in. Because in no way is an organization going to be negatively impacted by having potentially everyone on the floor able to do any job in that warehouse. Like, yes, you know, because that could be something that someone learns, oh, I really like working with this customer. I really like working with this freight profile. I like this. I want to do more with this. But then you might have someone else that's like, well, I hate that profile. I only want to do it if I absolutely have to or I have to cover for someone on vacation. And I feel like that also helps instead of just saying like, okay, well, you're here, you're stuck here doing this, have a nice day. But if it's like, oh, I prefer working with this, you can kind of match everyone to their strengths and say, okay, well, you feel a little bit more fulfilled doing something that you enjoy versus sitting there and packing something that you absolutely hate.
100%. Completely agree with that.
Jumping back to the e-commerce thing, we have a little bit of time, but so there's so many more cases of e-commerce growth happening, whether you're a small to medium-sized shipper or more. What do you think 3PLs and freight brokers need to do to kind of adapt their services to meet these new needs that are coming out of all of these?
Well, that's a very good question. And I've thought about this one a lot. I think the challenge in today's market, especially for a 3PL, you have to be so much more nimble. You have to be so much more flexible. You can't have rigid technology. You can't have rigid automation. You've got to be able to kind of move on a dime. And realistically, when you start looking at automation that's on the market now, it's really gravitating to that, whether it's the cobots of like a Locus Robotics or maybe a goods-to-person system that's a little bit, I would say, more maneuverable in terms of like a high, you know, robotic system. So there's a lot of things that are, I would say, more modular in approach. From a transportation side, I mean, you just have to be more flexible in nature. And again, you have to provide a hell of a lot more visibility. Everyone is clued into visibility these days, right? We've all ordered something. We all get those random either Facebook or Instagram ads. Right? Like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and buy this. And then you don't get anything. And you find out, you know, 3 months later when you get it, it came from China and there was no, and you actually forgot about that you actually bought it, right? So a lot of that is happening in today's market. And I think the key for the consumer, because Amazon has basically, you know, I would say conditioned the customer to, hey, I might not get it in a day or two, and that's okay, but I got to have visibility throughout the process. So what's the visibility? And if you could do that successfully, typically you make the customer happy, specifically if you offer free shipping. Now, you know, it's going back and forth whether, you know, everyone needs to offer free shipping anymore. And that's going to be the next piece, right? Is it, if I'm a consumer buying it, if I have to pay for shipping, am I actually going to do that? Right. So am I actually going to make this purchase? And that's something that you're kind of seeing quite a bit. And then you start looking at returns, right? Should you tighten returns or how that should that be, right? And every major brand out there is starting to figure out that I got to tighten returns because of all the fraud and everything else that's going on. So from a 3PL and a provider perspective, I would just say you just have to be nimble and you can't be old and rigid. And if your systems are, you know, 10, 15 years old, and you're a big provider, big 3PL, big retailer, whatever it is, there's a fair amount of rigidity there that it's almost impossible to overcome. And you just can't have that in today's market.
I think that is absolutely spot on. I mean, I've long since said the day that someone figures out how to master reverse logistics or returns, that they immediately can just call themselves a trillionaire, because the second someone is able to figure that out and do it well, it's amazing. Because there was a shipper I worked with where basically they would take anything back and it would just sit in these giant cardboard boxes. And once the box is full, they someone would go pick it up. And I have no idea what happened to it afterwards, but nobody ever wanted to go pick those up because they were horrible. And of course, the box had fallen apart and it was just a nightmare. And I mean, even hearing some of the it was on drop off point people that they're just like, please don't bring. Please don't. So I think that the day that someone figures out a good solution to returns, I think it's an absolute game changer for everything in this industry. I personally can't wait.
Well, I think the other thing is too, and I've been informing my team, a lot of people love this, is it also returns also are based off the, I would say, the life of a brand. So a new age brand coming out, they want to do everything for the customer. They want to be as nice as possible. They want to give a credit the second someone says, hey, I'm returning this. They don't have a really good way of understanding their returns. They look at the cost because everyone's a little siloed. They look at the cost of the process of the returns as opposed to the one key item, which is, can I get this return back into stock, right? What's my recovery rate? And what makes the most sense? Is this a $3 item? Is this a $400 item, right? What do I really need to get back into stock and how does it actually impact my P&L? And it's, you know, and it goes through the ultimate evolution and everyone wants to be nice to a customer, but quite honestly, there's just too much fraud out there. There's just too many people doing really shady things when it comes to returns. And you got to hold your customers accountable. You have to be nice. I agree and do the right thing by the customer, but you also, you know, you have to hold customers accountable to what they purchased.
But that being said, we are running out of time today. And Ryan, this might be the hardest question you're asked all day to today, but everybody that comes on the show has to answer it. So are you ready?
I think so.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Depends on the type of hot dog.
Oh, okay.
I put a lot of thought into this. So all the questions that I had to prepare for this one, it really stumped me. And I would say if it's like a Chicago dog, yes. If it's just like a barbecue dog where it's like for your kids where it's burnt and it's not really good and you put some, you know, ketchup or something on it, absolutely not. So it just depends on the type of hot dog.
So if you get like a loaded hot dog with like a mac and cheese on top.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if it's just y'all backyard neighborhood, get it off the grill. Or for me, I'm a monster that microwaves my hot dogs.
That is terrible. You shouldn't tell people you do that.
I proudly say that I like a good microwaved hot dog. It annoys every single person in my life. And I'm a monster for it, but I don't mind it. Don't get me wrong. I don't mind a grilled dog, but
good for you.
All right. So if anyone has any potential hot dog sandwiches for you, or if they have any questions on distribution or fulfillment, where can they find you outside the show?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead and find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to get in contact.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
Find Check Call the Podcast anywhere you get your podcasts, like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Don't forget to check out all the other incredible FreightWaves shows. And don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter on FreightWaves.com/checkcall. See you on the internet.